All right, let's rock and roll. Podcast episode number 20. Today is the Q&A pod.
This is a special podcast for us. This is a celebratory podcast.
It's like a milestone, right? 20
podcasts. That's 5 months of podcasting. Mm-hmm. Almost 100,000 followers on TikTok.
Yes.
Almost 10,000 followers on Instagram. Exponential growth when it comes to views, comments, downloads.
You guys have been listening all across the world, which is so crazy.
All over.
Little small town girls.
Our first collaboration invite.
Oh, our first sponsor.
Someone is offering to pay us to sponsor their product. Like, come on.
Yeah, pop
here
off
we go.
That therapy. Okay, cheers.
Cheers,
to
episode
that.
20.
Okay, guys, so today we're doing a Q&A pod. We asked on our Instagram, or on my Instagram, I asked you guys what questions you had for us. If you don't follow us on Instagram and you want to be a part of the next Q&A, then definitely go follow us. You could follow Bad Therapy Podcast on Instagram, or you can follow our individual accounts. Mine's Allie Cruz with two E's and an underscore, and then
Madison Dean, D-E-A-N-E with an underscore.
Yeah, we got our questions from you guys, and a lot of them, I feel like our relationship pods do the best, and yeah. So a lot of them were relationship geared. So today we're going to be answering all of the relationship related ones, relationship related, and then we will save the other ones for a different pod because I think they're all good, but we got more relationship than anyone, so we're just gonna structure it.
And the feedback for our pod has definitely been people love like the realness, mm-hmm. because we're not, you know, bullshitting, we're not saying, you know, wake up, go to the gym, find the right partner. Like, we're very real with our yeah. real life scenarios and our real life struggles. And we try to be very honest with you guys about
how we feel about shit and shit we've been through.
How we suffer and how we get yeah. through it.
How we're all suffering together. And don't honestly, let anybody fool you.
You know, we suffer.
Yeah.
And that feedback, more than anything, makes us just want to be more open. Because mm-hmm. when you get on the internet and you do something like this, there is obviously a part of your brain that's like, you have to dial it back a little bit. You kind of have to, you don't want to spill all your tea. When we do have millions of followers and people look back at the tea that we've spilled, obviously it's a little uncomfortable for us, but that is why we love doing this, because we can relate to you guys. You can relate to us.
Yeah, well, I think that's why we have built such a loyal following so far, is because of the realness. And it's honestly nothing to be ashamed of. Like, everyone goes through obviously similar events in life, and that's why it's so relatable.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Like, we don't live that different of experiences. I mean, obviously there's some differentiation.
Yeah.
But
and it's nice to, like, I think the number one thing that I hear from people is like that they like not feeling so alone. And that's how I feel when I hear other people talk about these things, which is why that's kind of the direction I wanted to go with the podcast, you know? So to kick things off, the first question says, coping after someone cheats on you, second chances, what's healthy? Would you like to take this one?
I love this question because this is a universal question. What yeah. do I do when someone has cheated on me? Mm-hmm. And obviously there's different instances. Someone cheated on you in a toxic, unhealthy relationship where, like, it was pretty obvious that that was going to happen at some point. Or you're in a really healthy, really stable, long-term relationship and you are fucking blindsided
yeah.
by getting cheated on. And obviously there's two ends to how you handle it. I think the bottom line is, if someone cheats on you, regardless of if that was an intimate, long-term, thought-out cheat, you know, like,
or
a
like
premeditated
a
cheat.
Yeah, or just like a one-night stand.
Or they got super fucking drunk and made out with some girl at the bar. There's mm-hmm. way different ends of the spectrum on this.
Yeah.
I love that I automatically put it on the men.
Yeah.
When someone cheats on you, to get that trust back, regardless of what the cheating was, it's so hard. Mm-hmm. It's nearly impossible.
I was in a relationship once and he told me, not for anything that had happened like within our relationship, I think maybe he did something that like broke our trust, but he told me that once the trust is broken, the relationship is over. And I remember, you know, I was like, no, it's fine, we can get through this, whatever, being a dumb bitch, obviously. But I remember looking back at that relationship, and that comment has stuck with me all through these years, because it's so true. Once trust is broken on any level, let alone something so intimate like cheating on your partner, whether it's emotional or physical
just
intimacy,
that blatant disrespect of the relationship,
yeah, like yeah. the lack of regard for you in the relationship and for your partner and how that makes them feel. And I know that cheating on someone doesn't like immediately make them a bad person, but it does make them a bad partner. And I think that it's easier said than done to just leave. But I really think that if you were cheated on, staying in that relationship is just disrespectful to yourself. Like, now they've disrespected you and now you're disrespecting yourself by staying. In certain special cases, I think maybe you could try to work through things with like lots of therapy. But at the end of the day, no matter how much time passes or anything you go through, you're always going to have that in the back of your mind. You're never going to trust them. Where are they?
You can't let
it go. What's going on? Can I go through your phone? Like, it's just going to add a layer to your relationship of like discomfort.
And resentment.
Yeah. You're you're never going to feel comfortable with them doing or being anywhere with anyone.
Well, and then what happens is they walk on eggshells because they're so worried about pissing you off or you being triggered by something.
Yeah.
And then they end up resenting you because you don't want them to go hang out with their friends. You can't, you don't want to let them out of your sight.
And another thing too is like, if you're with them and you choose to stay, then you have to let it go. Like
right.
You can't bring it up every time you think about it and it makes you mad, because I've never been in this situation specifically, but I think it would be related to how I felt in the past when I was in like a bad relationship and they did something that hurt me. And every time I thought about it, I would immediately get mad at them.
And
again.
Then you can get, then you create anger and create fights out of this old thing that happened.
Then it's like, it's over with. I chose to stay. I chose to work through this. I don't get to be mad at you for this every 3 days or every hour that I think about this, because it still hurts me. You have to really be strong enough to let it go. And I just don't know if you can let that go.
Well, and if you can't let it go, which of course you can't, you have to be strong enough and emotionally mature enough to be understanding of your own feelings and not put them onto your partner.
Right.
Because you decided to stay, you decided to work through it.
Yeah.
You're of course still allowed to have feelings about it. You're gonna, there's nothing you can do about that, but you absolutely can't use it against them. You can't use it as a weapon because you chose to stay and to move forward. And you have to think about the fallout of that, right? You decide you want to stay because you love this person and they love you and they made a genuine mistake, right? They haven't been fucking some person for months and months and months behind your back. Like, they hooked up with someone drunk at a bar. That's the instance. You have to think about the fallout of how you're going to continue in that relationship and continue to have a healthy, happy relationship when you're harboring these resentful, untrusting feelings. Mm-hmm. And to get over that, I mean, I heard a quote once that said, it was about a married woman who stayed with her husband after he cheated. And she said, "I chose to forgive him for all of the things he did right instead of the one thing he did wrong." And she forgave him and she moved on and they had a life together and he never cheated again. That's a lapse in judgment on his part that she was able to move on from. But I think in most cases, it's not that simple.
Yeah, in most cases, I would say it's just a blatant sign of disregard for you in the relationship. Because if you think about like where you, like put yourself in their shoes, what would be going through your mind in a scenario where you would cheat on your partner? You probably wouldn't be thinking about your partner. And if you were thinking about your partner, you probably wouldn't be thinking any good thoughts. And I think for me, that would make it just too difficult to move on from, because I would think like, how could you do that to me and then come back to me and tell me you love me? And then in another sense, even if that doesn't bother you, if you're able to get past that, being intimate with your partner after they've been intimate with someone else, that would be too hard for me, because that's
makes you sick.
And some people are better with that type of stuff. You know, some people like bringing like another girl in or another guy into their sex life or things like of that nature. I'm not that girl. I'm just, what's mine is mine. And that's that on that.
Well, I think that there's a lot that goes into it, because if you're cheating on your partner, regardless of if it's a one night stand, you're drunk, or it's a long-term thing, you've put yourself in a situation where cheating is possible. Mm-hmm. I am a firm believer that every human being, no matter how in love you are with somebody, is capable of cheating. Mm-hmm. So to maintain a healthy long-term relationship, 20, 30, 40 fucking years.
Discipline.
You have to keep yourself out of situations where cheating is even a possibility, because everyone has that potential at some level.
But at the same time, it's like, you also just have to have the discipline and strength to not fall victim to something like that because you care so much for your partner.
So there's this thing called breadcrumb cheating. And this is basically a trail of breadcrumbs that leads up to actually cheating on your partner. And that starts with something as small as liking someone's picture, following someone on Instagram who you have, you know, sexual or intimate thoughts about, right? Because we obviously all think other human beings are attractive. Mm-hmm. Putting yourself in a situation where breadcrumb by breadcrumb, you get to a point where cheating becomes a possibility. You're in each other's DMs. Maybe you're not being inappropriate, but someone's in your DMs. They're texting you. All of a sudden you find yourself deleting messages, not because you want to cheat or because you have any intentions of cheating, because you're realizing all of a sudden something that you've said or something they said is inappropriate. Mm-hmm. You've crossed a line.
Or like maybe that hasn't quite happened yet, but you feel like you're doing something wrong because maybe you're doing something wrong, or maybe you think you're about to do something wrong, and so you start feeling guilty.
Or it's a person that you have sexual or intimate feelings toward. You find them attractive. You have these thoughts. We're human beings. We all have thoughts. Mm-hmm. You can't act on every thought and every whim that you have. That's called an intrusive thought. Like, keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
And so the breadcrumb cheating is how really serious, like, long-term relationships can be ended, because you look in your boyfriend's phone, you're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
You've been DMing this girl for 6 months. I know there's nothing inappropriate.
Right.
Why are you talking to her?
Right.
And that turns into long-term someone having like a whole ass other relationship behind your back. And they don't know how it happened. Breadcrumb. Mm-hmm. Breadcrumb.
Well, to kind of wrap up this long-winded answer to this question, I would say, in my opinion, you don't have to stay in a relationship where you're being cheated on, whether it was once, 100 times, a kiss. Like, you could find someone that won't do that to you. And I firmly believe that not everyone is a cheater. And I don't necessarily believe that once a cheater, always a cheater, but once a cheater, always capable of being a cheater.
Yeah. So absolutely. And that's kind of why if you're going to forgive them, you have to fully forgive them and fully be willing to move on. Otherwise, you're dragging your relationship through the mud. If you're not willing to do that, it's time to walk away.
And in my opinion, I just don't think you should be willing to do that. I think you should just be like, fuck you for the disrespect.
Yeah.
Goodbye. And obviously, walk away, take your pride and pack it up and get the fuck out of there.
Yeah. And obviously there's some very specific instances. Like, I could understand maybe somebody staying, but that's like so slim. That's like the 0.0001%.
Yeah. We're not talking about the anomaly of situations. Yeah, like,
absolutely.
But like, I think I'm telling you right now, if I got cheated on, I would never be able to get past it. And I would be absolutely devastated and it would ruin my relationship. No matter how much I tried to fix it, it's done.
Never go back.
No.
Well, I guess the reason I say that is because I'm one of those people that has been cheated on repetitively. Like, I'm talking violently cheated on. Obviously, that was in a very abusive relationship, physically, mentally, emotionally abusive. And so I speak to those women or those men that are in those situations where it's so toxic and you're in so deep, you feel like your whole world has been flipped upside down. Yeah. And you find out they cheated on you, but you've let them disrespect you in so many other ways. It's so toxic that at that point, cheating is just the cherry on top. Mm-hmm. You've stayed through everything else. You've stayed through the physical, emotional abuse. Mm-hmm. And then they cheat on you and you're almost not surprised. Mm-hmm. And you stay. Now, obviously, I'm never condoning staying in a relationship like that because like fucking run with your tail between your legs. Mm-hmm. But for people that are in those toxic situations where you feel like you can't get out and you get cheated on, that's just another sign for you that they're not the person you're supposed to be with. They're never going to treat you with respect. And if you don't have the capacity and the strength to leave in that moment, just file it away. And remember that you are strong enough to leave situations like that. And there is nothing worse than being in a situation like that. Being alone is a hell of a lot better than being treated like that.
Yeah, Madison and I definitely have different experiences when it comes to this. So we have different like outlook on what you should do. I've never been cheated on. I've cheated on someone. Like, I'll be like honest. I was young and I regretted it. And I actually broke up with the person right afterwards because of the guilt. I think back to what was going through my mind when I made the decision to step out of my relationship. And I wasn't like in love with that person.
You were
anymore.
Already checked out.
I wasn't happy. And so I know that, you know, I don't want to say men and women are that different. Like, men cheat just physically and women cheat emotionally. Like, mine wasn't an emotional cheating situation. Mine was just like, I think I wasn't sure if I wanted to leave the relationship I was in, and I was too scared to make that decision to leave, which I regret, obviously. And I think I got my karma in relationships because of that. I actually believe in karma like so deeply. And yeah, I remember doing that, and just it immediately solidified like the fact that if I was willing to do that to the person that I love, then I don't love that person. So in my mind, if someone were to cheat on me, my mind would immediately go to like, they don't love me.
They're not involved emotionally.
Yeah,
involved
they checked out for like, even if it was for a second, that's too much for me to want to be with you. Because then it's like, for the rest of our relationship, I'm going to be wondering, do they love me? Do they not love me? And then that just breeds insecurity and resentment. And it's just not worth it. I think if anyone's stepping out of a relationship, there's someone's not happy. Not that like, there's an excuse for cheating, but like, there's got to be a better place in life for you if that's the like existence that you're living or the situation that you're in. I think we get so caught up in like what's right in front of us and we're afraid. It's like that lack mindset where we forget that there's more to life and like
there's more out there. Yeah,
there's more out there. Like, just because this one situation isn't working or this one person isn't doing it or something's going wrong, like we think we're never gonna find another one like him. Like, you will. There's hundreds and hundreds just like him,
and they won't cheat on you.
Yeah. And then there's hundreds that aren't like him and they won't cheat on you. Yeah. Or they're better than him.
Absolutely. Yeah. To finish that question out, if someone's cheating on you, it's because they're checked out in one way or another. And you have to look in the mirror and decide if you're willing to accept that for yourself.
Yes.
Final answer.
Next question. Can men and women have strictly platonic relationships?
That's a good one. I'll let you take the start.
So personally, like, I hate to say it because I do have a lot of guy friends. And, you know, like, I love my guy friends, but I think that you can have strictly platonic relationships. But if you're in a relationship, I don't think that that exists in the sense like, you can have guy friends and you can have girlfriends of the opposite sex, but you cannot have like a girl best friend if you're a guy, or a guy best friend if you're a girl. Like
someone that you're seeing constantly.
That you're like hanging out with one-on-one. Like you guys can be friends, like that's great, but you're not hanging out with them one-on-one. You're not super close, because no, I think in those situations, and you can fucking roast me at the stake for saying this, but it's the truth. One person has stronger feelings for the other in order for that type of a relationship to work out. And I speak from personal experience. Usually it's the guy that has feelings and the girl. I would say girls have an easier time being friends with guys, strictly platonically, but I feel like it's pretty common for the guy to have feelings for the girl that maybe the girl's unaware of, or that he hasn't told her. But like in my mind, if you as the woman were to confess your love to the guy, like I feel like they would probably jump at the seams to like fuck you or sleep with you or date you,
any opportunity they could get. Well, exactly, especially if they're sexually attracted to you. I saw a recent story about this on Love is Blind, where a couple was together, they were engaged, and the guy had a girl best friend, and come to find out he hooked up with this girl in the past, and he told his fiance this, and of course she's fucking pissed.
Well, yeah, and he was like hanging out with these girls like every night constantly, without his girlfriend, texting them all day long. Like it wasn't just like, oh, this is my friend, like brought them to meet his fiance, and then he had the audacity to get like upset with her for being like, I'm not leaving, those are my best friends. No, you fucked her. That is not no longer your best friend. That is not how that works. There needs to be a boundary set, because that's fucking weird.
And he was gaslighting her to make her feel bad about exposing his business, when in reality he proposed to this girl with a big ass secret, and then tells her afterward that he used to fuck his best friend.
Yeah, I actually had a relationship like this where he had fucked everyone. So literally, like, who hadn't he fucked? Was he allowed to be friends with everyone that he fucked? Because that comes up in relationships, especially in a small town. And, you know, you're dating people, everyone's friends with each other, everyone's hooked up with everyone. It's like, where does it become inappropriate being friends with someone that you've slept with before? Like, is that crossing a line? Can you be friends with someone like strictly platonically after you have had sex with them?
Hell no.
I don't think so either.
You can be cordial. I'm not asking you to spit on the girl when you see her in public. Do you text her? Do you hang out with her?
Right.
Do you call her? Do you follow her on fucking Instagram? No.
Yeah. Do you like her pictures?
I don't care if you guys were friends before you fucked and you fucked on a one-off. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah. Once you cross that line, there's no coming back from that.
And honestly, even if you haven't crossed that line, I don't think that men and women are always sexually attracted to each other in that way. I do think platonic relationships exist, but they exist on a certain level. Mm-hmm. You see each other out, you say hi. Mm-hmm. You play volleyball in a group together. Like, because I have a lot of guy friends I play volleyball with.
Yeah.
You are on a group setting, on an acquaintance level.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
If a guy or a girl is in your phone every day, hanging out with you, calling you, interrupting your relationship.
Like how you would act with your best friend. Like if you guys are talking to each other that much, that's fine to do if you're single. Do you go off the second you get in a relationship? And this has happened to me with some of my guy friends. When they get in a relationship, they all of a sudden don't really talk to me that much anymore. And as much as it does kind of hurt my feelings, like I get it and I respect it.
Yeah,
like I respect that, because they obviously care about their girlfriend. They're obviously self-aware enough to know that the way that we, how close we are, how much we would hang out, like isn't appropriate when you have a girlfriend.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a flirtationship. Most boy-girl relationships, even if it's platonic, it's a flirtationship. You have this flirty little goofy little fine.
Yeah.
You're not interested in each other romantically. That's fine. But when you're in a relationship, you have got to set boundaries and respect your partner enough to set those boundaries.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if you've been friends with this person for 10 years.
Yeah.
Obviously there's different situations. It's not all size fits one, but if you're relating to this and you're in a relationship and you have a girl best friend and your girlfriend's pissed about it, fucking stop.
Yeah.
Knock it off.
Knock it off. Like, is your girl best friend more important than
your relationship?
Your relationship.
And if she is,
then
break up with your girl.
Yeah. Go date your girl best friend.
Yeah.
Like truly. And I hate that when they say, oh, well, I've known her longer than you. Okay. Well, are you fucking sleeping with her? Are you spending every day with her? Are you meeting her parents? Like,
what are your intentions with her? Because what are your intentions with me? And as a person who has had male friends, acquaintances, I can say that I really have never had like a male best friend. I have had a very close male friend. He was very gay.
Yeah.
So.
And I actually have had a best friend that's a male, and we ended up dating.
Shocker. Everyone's
so shocked. There you go, folks. That's usually how that
about
turns
wraps
out.
Up that question for Q&A. Knock it off.
Yeah. And we're still friends to this day, but I know for a fact that if either of us got into a relationship, like we probably would never speak to each other.
You can't talk to each other in a relationship, especially after you've dated.
Yeah. Okay, Mad, this question is for you, because I feel like you have experienced this firsthand.
Probably true.
This question says, after being in only toxic relationships, how do you manage and navigate being in a healthy relationship? I feel bored.
Okay, so this is the question of the century because I was in an extremely toxic relationship. Like, I would say one of the far ends of the extreme. Mm-hmm. And now I'm in an extremely healthy relationship, mm-hmm. probably the far end of the extreme. Yeah. And it was, of course, it was tough for me. All I knew was that chaos. Mm-hmm. It's a roller coaster and you live for it. Like, that's why you're in it. It's up, it's down. It's up, it's down. You crave that chaos, that craziness. We touched on this in another podcast. It's like heroin in a way. It's an addictive chemical release.
Yeah, your brain reacts to toxic relationships how it does, like, drugs.
Well, and you, it's a learned reaction at that point. You learn that that's how you are supposed to be treated. That's mm-hmm. how you want to be treated. That's how you deserve to be treated. And your whole brain kind of rewires.
Yeah, it gets really used to the low lows and the high highs and searching for that high high. And so when you're in a healthy relationship and you don't have that low low high high kind of sporadic emotional wave that you're going through and it's just steady,
it feels
boring because you're never shooting up into the sky. You're just at like a baseline happy level.
Yeah,
but in your mind that's not happy, like, that's not love, that's not exciting, because it's passion. Not way up here. Yeah,
exactly. And that's why a lot of people struggle with going into a normal healthy relationship, because they don't feel that craziness and they're like, oh my god, maybe I'm not super in love with this person, maybe I don't have that passion for them.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm settling. And so when I finally was able to get out of my toxic relationship, one, take time. That's my first advice, is take your time after you get out of a very toxic relationship. Don't jump into the first relationship that you can find, because you're not ready. Your brain is not wired right. You're mentally, physically, emotionally unavailable at that point. And you're only going to be doing a disservice to the person you get in a relationship with.
Probably attract the wrong people at that time of your life anyways.
Yeah. So take your time. And when you do find a person who really is willing to treat you with respect and it's boring and steady, you have to be accepting and understanding of the fact that you deserve better, that you deserve this, and that this isn't crazy and it isn't passionate, but you're happy. It's healthy. It's normal. You're cared for. You're not on your toes all the time. You're not walking on eggshells. Really taking stock of like the good things that are happening and being grateful for the fact that you're not crying every other day and getting broken up with and getting cheated on. That for me was the biggest part of it, was just being so grateful for the
balance,
consistency. And the first 3 or 4 months of my healthy relationship, I fought that shit tooth and nail. Mm-hmm. Like, I did anything I could to get that person to leave me, or to get that person to react mm-hmm. the way that I thought I needed, to try and create chaos. Mm-hmm. And after seeing a therapist and being with a person who was really willing to work with me, I realized that I was only creating chaos because I thought that was what I needed. It wasn't what I actually wanted.
Yeah. It's all about retraining your brain to wanting like stability rather than quote unquote passion or excitement. Because, you know, they say that when you get butterflies, that's your body
warning signs
like anxiety.
Yeah.
And it's so true. And I'm guilty of this. And like, obviously I'm single and haven't met the right person, but a lot of the recent relationships that I've been a part of have been very, I don't want to say like tumultuous, because I haven't all been that, but they've been very up and down. And that's what I'm used to in relationships. You know, you'd think that when I do finally meet that person that brings me stability and comfort, that it'll be like refreshing and I'll be like, thank God, like I don't have to go through that anymore. But I do fear that I will view it as like boring, you know? So like, I relate to that, whoever asked that question, because.
Well, and I did too, for the longest. I never thought I would be with someone normal, ever.
Yeah.
I thought my whole life would be chaotic and toxic and bullshit. And I was okay with that at that point, because that's how my brain worked. But when you're with a person who creates a space for you to take the time to rewire your brain, exactly like you said, that's when it stops becoming boring and it just starts feeling safe.
Well, I like how you worded it, and you said that you have to appreciate what it is versus what you had. Like, really sit down and remember the bad times of your last relationship.
The really bad ones.
Like, think about the things that made you feel like the excitement. Was it good, or was it you laying in your bed crying all night because they did something, or they won't call you back, or they're mad at you, or this or that, or whatever the fucking case is, and then the next day they want you back and you're on a fucking mountain high in the sky because you're so happy that they want you back, but you're living on like this anxious web of like, are they gonna stay? When's the next fight gonna happen? Like, be appreciative that your man is sitting there with a face mask on, rubbing your feet. I don't know what the case may be, cooking you dinner,
safe,
watching The Bachelor with you.
Yeah, exactly. And that for me, now that I am to a place, and like I said, it took months and months. So if you're new in a safe relationship, give yourself some time to adjust. Now that I'm, you know, well into my relationship, I could not be more grateful for the safe space that has been created for me. I don't feel bored. I feel so fucking happy mm-hmm. that I am not, don't wake up every day with the fear of God in my heart, wondering what horrible thing is going to happen to me that day.
Yeah.
Praying that I just get one good day. You know, those boards that they put up in factories, like this many days since an incident.
Yeah.
I had one of those in my head, like just waiting for the next incident. It never went more than like 2 days.
Yeah.
When you get past the point of needing to create chaos or thinking that's the only way that you can be happy. Mm-hmm. And again, the only way you can do that is with a safe space. You don't feel bored anymore. You feel nothing but fucking gratitude.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm with the person who I genuinely feel like I want to spend my life with. I can speak to a relationship that I had in between.
Where you were bored?
I was a little bored. And that's okay. Maybe that's just not the right person for you. Like, I'm not saying if you're bored and unhappy and to settle.
Yeah.
But don't...
like, know the difference.
Yeah. Don't let those toxic tendencies be the reason that you leave a happy relationship with a good man.
Like, really think it through, because you could very well be bored, and it could, you know, like, if you're really thinking about this every day, like, you are like, something is does not feel right. Don't gaslight yourself into thinking that they're the person for you just because they're not toxic.
They're not an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, the bar's on the floor, girly.
Yeah. Like, make sure that there's actually a genuine love and connection there, and you can see your future with that person. And just take time to, I don't know, journal it out if you have to, like how you're feeling, to really like get down to the bottom of it, whether it is boredom or if it is just baseline happiness that you're feeling for the first time ever.
Contentness and you not understanding that things don't have to be so up and down. And it's funny because I saw this quote recently that said, you know, girl, if you're 25 or later, stop marrying for love and passion. Stop dating for those highs. Just find a stable guy that wants to provide for you financially, physically, emotionally. Because in 25 years, when you're 45, 50 years old and you're looking back and you're married to whatever guy you chose when you were 25, do you think you're going to wish you were with the stable guy who provides you financial stability, a house over your head, happy, healthy children, or the toxic guy that made you feel passion?
I'm so fucked because I could not date, let alone marry someone, unless I was bonkersly in love with them.
Well, and obviously, I'm not telling everyone to settle.
Yeah.
And luckily, I found both.
Yeah.
But I think that's the point, is that there's both out there for everyone.
So don't settle.
That crazy feeling that you feel when you're in a toxic relationship, that's not love.
Yeah.
Never will be.
Yeah. So this question, why do avoidantly attached people and anxiously attached people attract each other? So this is my theory on this, and I've done some research on it as well, but my theory from my personal experience is people's attachment styles are the result of some sort of childhood trauma. So for avoidance, it's usually that they didn't get the emotional support from their caregiver as a child, so they learned to deal with things on their own, which is what later in life causes them to avoid conflict and push back when people get too close. And on the other hand, anxiously attached people were also emotionally neglected, but they weren't given like the love and care that they so craved as a child. And so when they get older, they're constantly seeking that validation and love to like prove that someone can love them or that they can be loved.
That they're worthy of love.
Yeah. And so later in life, when these attachment styles start dating and they don't realize that they have these attachment styles, you'll notice that you do attract the opposite. And the reasoning behind that is because avoidantly attached people like the anxiously attached person in the beginning because they feel cared for and they feel emotionally supported and they feel loved. And that's something that they lacked in childhood. Of course, as time goes on, they push back against this because it's not something that they're used to.
It's
and
so
they revert back to their old ways. And then on the other hand, anxiously attached people like the avoidant because anxiously attached people crave love and closeness and someone to love them so much that when they can chase an avoidant and get them to love them, they're both satisfying the needs of the other person because of their individual traumas that they've been through or things that made them the way that they are. And it's like a magnet to one another.
I think that's kind of the thing about these attachment styles, is that they fuel each other's fire. An anxious attachment style is going to be constantly craving that validation, whereas the avoidant is constantly making them work for it. So because they need that feeling to feel validated, they're clawing at the avoidant to get what they need. Whereas the avoidant is pushing someone away, and they feel like they can push an anxious attachment style
because
away.
They're clawing at them.
They're coming. They're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
They have the validation that there's somebody clawing for them. They're validating them in their own way. Like, somebody is coming at me with this level of anxious attachment, that must mean I'm worth something. I should continue to push them away so I continue to get this feeling.
Yeah. Like, subconsciously, I think that that's how it works.
Right. It is subconscious, because people are never going to admit I'm anxious or I'm avoidant.
Well, I don't think that a lot of people are even aware of that. You know, I think that's why people feel like, why am I acting like this? Why is this happening? Because for me, as someone that's anxiously attached a lot of the time, I feel fucking crazy when I feel that way, because I know it's like not me and I know it's not reality. It's just like a reaction that I have to a situation or a person.
To someone's avoidance.
Yeah.
Whereas the avoidant feels the same way. They're like, this person is crazy. This
like, I liked them until they started to like me too much.
Yeah, and so they started being too much, and they don't realize they're not being too much. You're being too little and making them be too much.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, as long as you're able to be emotionally accountable and take control of this, you can kind of meet in the middle and say, okay, this is how we become stable.
Yeah. Well, and because with an avoidance, so this is how it starts, is they start to grow like a very deep connection. And at first, no attachment styles are triggered. Everyone's just living their life. They're in a happy relationship. And then the avoidant starts to feel like, okay, we're getting too close. And so then they start to pull back. And that's when the anxious gets triggered. And so then they push closer. Forward.
Yeah.
And then the avoidant, well, maybe they were having like a subtle thought or feeling like they wanted to pull away, but it was nothing like concrete. Once the anxious is triggered, then they're like, holy shit,
I need to pull way back.
Yeah.
This person is way too much. Yeah. And so the solution to this is on either side. If you notice yourself pulling way back or pushing way forward, that's the time to take accountability for your own feelings and say, hey, I need to stop pushing so hard or stop pulling so hard.
Yeah, like reflect on what in that situation is triggering you. Like get to the root of the problem. Forget about that person at hand altogether. Like you're not craving them that much. I promise you, it's something deeper. It's a wound deep inside of you that has been triggered from something that you have from a long time ago. And if you can make amends with that piece of you and at least be aware of it, it's a lot easier to navigate when you do feel triggered.
Well, that's where emotional intelligence comes into play, right? Because there's a lot of people who, like you said, they don't even realize how anxious or how avoidant they are.
It's hard, though, to get to the root of the problem because you really have to dig deep. And sometimes your brain is a powerful thing. It closes those doors of things that are painful or were painful to us to protect us. And that's why a lot of people don't like going to therapy, because it opens the floodgates for so many things that need to be dealt with.
That's why I avoided therapy for so long, because I was an avoidant.
Yeah.
I loved avoiding. It was easy for me. It was easy to avoid people that cared about me because that was comfortable.
You couldn't get hurt.
Exactly. And so not that this is true in all instances, but this is probably why you shouldn't get married like in your young 20s, early, you know, 19, 20, 21, 22. Like you're still developing these feelings, developing these emotions and creating the emotional intelligence to find solutions to these problems instead of just being set in your ways.
Yeah. Unless you're like someone that was miraculously never traumatized and you meet someone else. Good on you.
Good on you. It's like my boyfriend is so stable, always has been.
Right.
Like,
which is wild because it's not like he ain't been through shit.
Right. Like some people just don't get triggered like that, and good on them.
Well, genetics play a role too.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know? Clearly, we don't know how to make an answer to a question short, so we are running out of time, but I have a couple other things I wanted to talk about on this podcast before it's over. So if you guys enjoyed the question answer segment of this podcast, feel free to send us your questions on Instagram, and yeah, we'd be happy to answer them in future podcasts.
We have quite a few more questions to answer that we got, so if we didn't get to your question tonight, sorry. Again, we kind of went on tangents. Fucking shocker.
Kind of talk a lot.
But we'll do another Q&A. This was good. I feel like this was informative.
Yeah, I enjoyed
informative.
It.
Informative. What am I, a doctor?
Yes. Okay, so something that I saw recently, and I don't know if you've heard of this. Have you heard of the bird test theory?
No, I haven't.
So there's a way that you can gauge whether or not a relationship is going to last, and it's called the bird test theory. So here's how it works. If you are out with your partner somewhere and you say, hey, babe, look, there's a bird over there. And then you gauge their reaction and their level of interest to that statement. If they are intrigued and excited just because you're excited, the odds of your relationship lasting is pretty good. But if they're like, what about it? Or just immediately shut it down, the odds of that relationship lasting are not very good. And the reason behind this is because someone that cares about you is going to care about the little things that interest you, even if it's something like a stupid little bird that you see flying by.
Insignificant and irrelevant for that moment. Yeah.
And if they immediately shut you down, don't care, uninterested, basically make you feel dumb or don't add to the conversation in any way and just immediately shut it down, that's a terrible sign because they're not interested in what you have to say. They don't care about you in a sense, because you can even go as far to say as they don't care about you and your thoughts and what you like.
Well, and I think that's a good way to gauge like a narcissist too, because someone who's narcissistic really only cares about the way that you make them feel and the things that they're interested in. And if you say, oh my gosh, look at that bird, babe. And they're like, they look at you like you're dumb and they're like back to talking about themselves or what they were talking about and show no interest in something that you were excited about. I mean, that's red flag number one.
Yeah. Well, I think even just in general too, like if someone really loves and cares about you and cherishes you, they're going to care about your mind and what interests you. And something small is going to, even if they don't care, they're going to pretend to care in the moment because you care.
And they're happy to see you happy.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Like you look over at a bird. It's funny because I relate to this so directly. Like all the time I'm like, look at that wee little squirrel. And my boyfriend's like, what a lovely squirrel. And it's nice. It's a wholesome moment. Even though it was so unnecessary, irrelevant, the squirrel was nothing special.
Because it's so discouraging just in general. Like even if you're not gauging your relationship, like when you see something and you're excited or you want to talk about something insignificant or just, it could be anything. It doesn't have to be a bird. And they don't care, or you can tell that they just aren't listening, or they don't really give a rat's ass about what you're talking about. Like it's such a discouraging feeling, especially when the person you love, like that's the only person you really care about, caring about what you care about.
Wow, say that three times
fast.
I was just gonna say that. Locked in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing about people who are kind of glass half full and glass half empty is like almost a pessimistic response to just be like, cool bird, why are you saying that?
Yeah.
Whereas somebody who's full of life and happy and optimistic and in a good, happy relationship and a good state of mind, they're gonna notice a pretty bird. Yeah. They're gonna wanna talk about it.
Yeah. And I feel like you could be an optimistic, happy, go lucky person and still not care about the bird if you don't care about the person you're with.
Absolutely.
Because I think maybe subconsciously they're just like, okay, what about it? But when you genuinely love and care for someone, like to a different degree, you naturally just care more, I think, too.
They could be talking about a steaming pile of shit.
Yeah.
And be like, that shit is steamy, baby. Yeah, you're right.
Yes.
Like,
I love that you're telling me this.
Just
right
having
now.
Enthusiasm for something your partner is talking about and being connected in the conversation and wanting to engage.
It's connection, because that's the main point of a relationship. Like everyone says, oh, there's intimacy. Intimacy is connection, whether it's sexual, physical, or emotional or mental. It's all boils down to being connected to someone.
Yeah. And you can't just have one. Like you can't just have sexual intimacy.
No.
And hope for nothing else.
Yeah.
Especially as a woman, like you're the first thing you're looking for.
Emotional connection.
Intimacy.
Yeah.
You're not going to have sexual intimacy without emotional intimacy.
Truly.
And that starts with something as simple as being excited about the fucking bird.
100%. I think back to what you just said, you can probably have sexual intimacy with a woman in the beginning of a relationship, because in the beginning it's, oh, we're, you know, the honeymoon phase, you're so attracted to each other, it's lust. But then men get mad a year down the line, 2 years down the line, when their girlfriend no longer wants to have sex with them. And it's like, you never created a safe, emotional, connective space for your guys's like emotional intimacy to build with one another. All you have is the physical connection. And I think most women, like I won't speak for all women, but women need
speaks for all women.
Yeah. Women need emotional intimacy to have physical intimacy. There are a select few women out there that just like to have sex for sex. But I think when it comes to having sex with the same person every single
day and being in a relationship,
you need to have that emotional intimacy. Like it can't just be sexual. Whereas for men, I think you can just have the physical and you don't need both.
Well, and I think back to the bird test theory, like if you're not excited about that for her, you probably don't like her that much. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think men need to kind of look in the mirror. Like if you're not interested in what she's saying, you don't want to talk to her. You don't want to listen to her. You don't want to have conversations. You probably don't like her that much.
I was 100% in a relationship where that man just thought I was attractive.
He liked having sex with you.
He just liked what I looked like.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't just the sex. It was just he liked what I looked
and
like.
And the status that your looks brought. Yeah.
I just think, because I remember asking him one time, I was like, what do you like about me? And he was like, you're just so cute.
You're hot.
Like, I was like, I'm smart. I'm funny.
Anything deeper would be lovely. Thank you. No, it's your.
But I don't think he even could answer that question, because I don't think he ever knew any of those things about me, because there was no deeper like level of our relationship. It was all just physical.
And that's where it comes down to, if a guy doesn't like you that much, he's not asking about you. He's not talking to you.
Not remembering the
He might want
things.
To have sex with you a lot. Yeah. That might make you feel like he likes you a lot.
Right.
But
and it does.
It's so much deeper than that. If they like you, they genuinely like you, like on a non-sexual level, you will know because of the conversations they have, because of the way they treat you, the way they talk about you to their peers. Mm-hmm. Like the way that a man talks about you to his friends and his family is a direct correlation to how he feels about you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, on that note, I think we definitely covered a lot of ground here on this pod.
Happy Dirty 20, baby.
Happy Dirty 20.
Thank you so much for the support, the continued support, and the new support for our new followers. We're going to stay consistent. We love this. So,
And cheers. We'll see you guys next
Friday.
Week.